Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and today we begin the show by talking about some new nut and fruit crops in Wisconsin that are being developed or are developed already. Things like hazelnuts, there's a new table grape, we'll talk about black currants and honeyberries and kernza and winter oil seed crops with our guest, Jason Fischbach, back with us. He's an emerging crops outreach specialist, professor with UW-Madison's Division of Extension, and he specializes in developing new cropping options for farmers. And it's great to have him with us. His work, I think it's been 2007, has been dedicated to developing a commercially viable hazelnut industry in our state and throughout the Upper Midwest through the Upper Midwest Hazel Development Initiative, which he co-leads. And what would you like to know about these new nut and fruit crops as we move along? I hope you'll join in. Are you thinking of adding any to your garden? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Jason Fischbach, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's probably worth reviewing a few things. You're part of this Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Institute. And just what's the overall goal of that and the work you do? You co-direct it.
Yeah, ultimately our goal is to build a crop here that growers can grow and make money and consumers across the state can enjoy. Hazelnuts are an interesting nut in that worldwide they're super popular. You go to Europe, it's sort of like the equivalent of our peanut. But it's never really been a thing in the United States, primarily because they haven't been available. The Pacific Northwest, because of Oregon, it's been a thing. But Midwesterners are finally discovering hazelnuts and they love them. And we can't grow them fast enough to get them. So, this is a huge opportunity for growers. It really would be our first commercial nut crop for the state, for the Upper Midwest. And it's happening, which is the fun part. I'm right now sitting in our processing facility up in Ashland, processing hazelnuts for about 40 different growers. Next week, our friends over at the Red Cliff Tribe are bringing students with the hazelnuts they harvested over the fall, and we're going to process those for them. Plants are starting to be sold by the nurseries. It's really an exciting time, not just for hazelnuts, but there's a couple other fruit crops that have had some recent breakthroughs. And it's
going pretty well. You know, I have my understanding, well, I know that hazelnuts have a pretty thick shell, if I'm not mistaken. So it makes it, and so the processing of them is interesting to me. How are they processed? And I think also Wisconsin hazelnuts are, if I'm not mistaken, a little different from the ones in Oregon.
Yeah, so the stuff that grows wild in Wisconsin, American hazelnut and beaked hazelnut, pretty small with thick shells and relatively small kernels, versus the stuff in Oregon, the European hazelnut's much larger and a thinner shell. And when you cross the two, you get the best of both worlds. You get the disease resistance and winter hardiness from our plants here in the Midwest, and we get a larger nut size from the European hazelnuts. And those species all kind of freely intercross. So just by doing some basic breeding, just crossing these plants, we can get some really interesting material. Now, it takes a long time to develop new cultivars. That's why we've been at it for 20 years. But we finally feel like we've crossed the bridge. We have what we now call the Adventure Series of hazelnut cultivars. And our nurseries are working as fast as they can to get those propagated and out to growers. In the meantime, you can still buy seed origin plants, which a lot of growers like to do. These are just plants that are grown from seed rather than from cuttings. And you get some really great nuts from there. It's just more variable and a little lower production. But
yeah,
so lots of options right now for growers that have never been there before.
Jess in Manitowoc, I think, has a question relating to this. So let's go there. Jess, hi.
Hi, I have a question. I'm not exactly a spring chicken. And I wondered if I bought hazelnut, if I wanted to try growing them, if that would actually, in fact, I'll get any nuts in my lifetime. I'm in my 60s.
Sure. Yeah, so the plants that are available from nurseries now, if all goes well, you'll have, if you plant in 2026, you'll have nuts in 2028, if all goes well. It won't be a lot, but you'll start being able to pick something. It's usually by the fifth year after planting where you start to see some pretty good production. The other thing to keep in mind is hazelnuts don't self-pollinate, so you need two compatible, kind of like apples, right? Yeah. Don't worry about it because there's so much apple pollen, but for hazelnuts, if you live near the woods or something, there's probably wild hazelnuts that do the pollination for you, but you do need more than one plant and they need to be compatible. The other thing too to keep in mind, especially if you're kind of doing it on a smaller scale in your backyard or a small acreage, is not only do you like hazelnuts, but so do all your furry friends, squirrels, chipmunks, blue jays. So you got to kind of plant enough for them and for you, because they will come in and clean you out if you're not on top of the harvesting.
Well, and they like them because they're, well, they taste good, and they're also highly nutritious, if I'm not mistaken.
So nutritious, yeah. They're about 60% oil by weight, and the oil is almost identical to olive oil. We kind of call it the olive oil of the north, and it's got a lot of protein, a lot of vitamin K, so it's a really, really healthy, just like all nuts, but hazelnuts in particular is a really healthy nut.
So how do you process them? You know, you've got a processing facility. How do you crack them open and get those nuts out?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on your scale. We have lots of people that just hand crack in front of the fire over the winter, right, from their own backyard plot. Then you can buy these small scale that you can run with like a cordless drill that you can crack out nuts, you know, for less than a couple $100. For us, we actually have some imported cracking equipment from Europe. We have some Spanish-made crackers that, you know, we can dump in bucket loads at a time, and in 10 seconds, we've got them all shelled out. From there, the hard part is separating out the shell fragments from the kernel. Yeah. So we have a bunch of equipment that through sizing and color, we can sort the kernel from the shell fragments. So
that's
definitely
good.
At scale, not something you can really do in your own garage. Which is why we built this processing line, to make it available to anyone that wants to use it, just as a way to bridge to where we have more and more producers and more processors.
Yeah. Well, most of us have a nutcracker, you know, for walnuts or whatever. So you got your own hazelnut tree. I have two trees you need. You're going to probably just... I like that idea, sitting in front of the fireplace in the wintertime and cracking those open.
And our website has some really good pictures and tutorials on some DIY dehuskers and crackers and things. So MidwestHazelnuts.org is a good place to start if you're thinking of getting hazelnuts.
Yeah, it really is. And there's actually some other good information just on the planting and that and sort of care as well, I noticed on the site.
Yeah, and there's a brand new website called MidwestHazels.com, and that's the source for plant material for new seedlings and the new Adventure Series cultivars. At this point, the ordering's not open, but you can get on the mailing list and be notified.
Kathy in Greenleaf will go to you. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I just have a few comments. My husband and I have been growing hazelnuts for about 15 years. And we started out probably with about 5 plants, probably have close to 100, 125 shrubs throughout the our backyard and such. And we only get enough for probably myself to make a few recipes of hazelnut biscotti, because we know when they're ready, the squirrels, the chipmunks, the blue jays are just swarming. The bushes look like they are alive when they're in there harvesting. And I'm really interested in, I didn't know that there was another cultivar, and we're anxious to try that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for calling, Kathy. Something to add there in answer to Kathy, Jason.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely for folks thinking about hazelnuts to keep that in mind, is the wildlife pressure is for real. Like when they're ripe, every animal, it seems like, in the county knows where they are. So being ahead of the harvesting is really important. And, you know, for smaller scale, you might consider netting, something like you would do for the birds, for blueberries or honeyberries or something. Otherwise, you just have to kind of plant a lot. So we just want growers to be aware of that when they get into it.
Yeah.
The newer cultivars, you know, higher yield, so that helps a lot. The older genetics, the older seedlings would be really variable. So you might have a plant that never produces nuts or hardly any, and then you have some that produce a lot. So the reason why we're trying to develop cultivars is so that every plant you're growing has lots of nuts every year. That's the goal.
And the varieties now that you're recommending and based on your research over time again are?
It's called the Adventure Series, and there's five of them. There's Adventure, Trail Runner, Forager, Cash, and yeah, I think that's, oh, and Ice Age.
Ice Age, okay.
Yep.
Kathy, there you go. Thank you very much. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and are those nuts going to be larger than what
yes.
The original ones are?
Yeah, so we selected those to have a larger nut size than the wild American hazelnuts. They're not as large as the Oregon hazelnut cultivars. They're halfway in between, basically.
Okay. There you go, Kathy. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Don in Iron River, we'll go to you. Hi, Don.
Say, fellas, I've tried to grow filberts, which I think they are a hybrid of hazelnuts, and I have not had a lot of luck.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
So it could be a couple of things. Sometimes filberts are used as another name for the European hazelnut or the Oregon-grown hazelnuts. And generally, especially up in Iron River where we are, they're not going to survive the winter reliably. And there's also a disease called Eastern filbert blight, which all of our American hazelnut and beaked hazelnut have co-evolved with, so they have resistance, but the European hazelnut largely does not. So that could be part of it. The other part is the seedling origin plants. So in other words, they're grown from a seed rather than from cuttings.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're from a seed, they're going to be really variable from plant to plant because they're genetically different. And so you might have some plants that just don't perform well just because genetically they don't perform well. That's why we do plant breeding, right? To select those plants that do the best. So, but that's been the problem is that's largely all that's been available until now are those seed origin plants.
We actually last week on Garden Talk, we spent some time talking about the difference between seed-oriented seedlings and cultivars.
Yep.
There's a big difference between them.
Yeah, that's really important to bring up, especially with new and emerging fruit crops, because, things like pawpaw and persimmon, things that'll grow maybe in the southern part of Wisconsin, or chestnuts, kind of on the margin, but you've got seed origin plants or cultivars. And so as a grower, if you buy seed origin plants, you're going to get a lot more diversity, which you might want, versus if you get cultivars, you have known traits, known performance. But the problem, the risk is if you choose the wrong cultivar, or it hasn't been adequately tested near where you live, it might be, not do very well. So that's sort of the space we're in right now where we've got both seedlings and cultivars available.
And a cultivar, just to quickly re-explain that, Jason, what is a cultivar versus a seedling?
Yeah, so it's a named variety of plant or a named genotype or a genetic type that is propagated vegetatively. So each plant is genetically identical. Think of like a Honeycrisp apple, where they're all identical plants from one single plant that somebody found that was really good.
Yeah, there you go. Jason Fishbach, our guest today, he is the Emerging Crops Outreach Specialist with the UW-Madison Division of Extension. He's a professor, been doing this work on hazelnuts and other crops, berry crops as well, for 20 years or more. And we look forward to you joining in. Questions or comments, give a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at the research being done on fruit and nut crops for Wisconsin and really the upper Midwest, Jason Fishbach is the guy that's leading the group, is one of the co-leaders of the group looking to improve varieties. And great to have him with us. You can join in. Again, the number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. A couple of more things about hazelnuts before we maybe turn our attention more to berries, although we'll certainly take questions about anything right now. What kind of growing conditions do hazelnuts here in Wisconsin really like?
Yeah, so we're still in the search for the Goldilocks zone, so to speak, of where they grow the best. But we have plants from the northern tip of Bayfield County all the way to the southern border. And the hybrids or the American hazelnut, they grow fine across that range of temperatures. Soil type, it's like anything. You know, the better the soil, the better the production and the overall growth. But we have it on sandy soils in Spooner. We have it on deep loams in the Madison area. So they're pretty widely adapted. Unless you've got, you know, like pure clay or pure beach sand or muck or something, if you've got just a regular old soil, I think you can plant hazelnuts.
I'm thinking about gardeners now, you know, sort of the backyard gardener variety. How much space do they need, or how much space do, you know, would you have to consider?
It depends on the cultivar, but generally these plants, if you let them go without pruning, they might get 10, 15 feet tall by 6 to 10 feet wide. We do recommend some pruning to try to make them more manageable. So per plant, that's roughly the size, and you need, you know, at least two, preferably more. So they take up some space for sure.
Yeah, but they can be suitable for backyard gardeners.
Oh, yeah, and they're actually really pretty. When they turn colors in the fall, there's bright reds and crimson and 100 shades of brown or brownish red. So it's really an attractive ornamental plant too.
And finally, you mentioned, I mean, of course you eat the nuts, but you also mentioned other uses for hazelnuts.
Yeah, the wood has been used for millennia, for basket making, for walking sticks. You know, there's lots of arts and crafts projects to use with the wood. But it's also, you know, just wildlife habitat. It's surprising just how many insects make their home in a hazelnut shrub when we harvest in the fall. There's walking sticks and katydids and tree frogs. And so, you know, shrubs often are a missing component in our wildlife restoration projects, and hazelnuts really can fit the bill there. So even if you don't care about the commercial hazelnut production, if you're really thinking about wildlife for your property, hazelnuts are a great addition.
Well, and we'll certainly keep talking about hazelnuts as questions may come up, but let's turn our attention to some other crops that you're working on. And maybe you can tell us more about table grapes. You're working on some table grapes.
Yeah. So, Larry, I haven't been this excited about a new fruit crop in probably my whole career.
Oh.
University of Minnesota has nailed it, their breeding program. You know, we've been in a search for decades to find a seedless table grape that would reliably overwinter and taste good for the Midwest, and they did it. Can't understate enough or overstate enough how great the flavor of these grapes are. So it's called the Northern Glow grape series. There's three varieties, three cultivars. Lumi Glow is a greenish yellow one. Think of it like Hawaii in a grape.
Oh.
It really has a tropical flavor, sort of a pineapple flavor. We've had taste testing trials with it, and people go crazy for that grape. It tastes so good. It really is a game changer, that grape alone. So that's Luma Glow. Then there's Ember Glow, which is a reddish pink seedless table grape. Great flavor. Personally, not as preferred to me as the green one, but a great overall flavor. And then there's Shadow Glow, which is a really dark blue, almost black grape. And that's a flavor. It's really interesting. You put it in your mouth, you bite it, you're like, And then a second later, like, whoa, this is amazing. It's got a little spice to it almost. So I think once people get a handle or a hold of these and start eating them, I mean, it's going to be a thing for sure. So right now, what I'd recommend if you're looking for these plants, because they're just now being released by the University of Minnesota. So the nurseries have just gotten the stock plants to start making copies. So you'll have to get on waiting lists most likely, but it's worth it. If you go to if you just Google University of Minnesota Northern Glow grapes, you will find more information. So far, as I understand it, there's one nursery in Wisconsin that is selling or taking orders for the plants. They're licensed to sell them. That's Hauser's Superior View Farm up in Bayfield. I believe they've got their website up now. You can get on a waiting list.
Houses as in H-A-U-S-E-R-S?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Or Superior View Farm. And then there are two nurseries out on the East Coast that also are selling plants. So take a look at it. Now, it's a little bit, if you're planning to sell grapes, you do have to sign up with University of Minnesota's program called Superior Fruit Innovations. So you have to go sign up for that program, and then you get a basically permission to then buy plants. That's if you're planning to sell grapes. If you're not planning to sell the grapes, you can buy the plants without being part of that program. But so yeah, fun times in the table grape world. We've had these in our trials across the state. And so we'll continue to publish data on performance and that kind of thing as we go forward. So you know, Northern Glow, give it a look.
Oh man, that sounds great. Yeah, when I think about grapes or newer varieties, maybe Reliance comes to mind, and maybe Somerset Seedless.
Yeah, so Somerset Seedless has been actually reliable, but the flavor isn't anything like the Northern Glow.
Yeah,
and you tend to get a lot of smaller clusters. And Reliance is kind of a misnomer. We had it freeze back to the ground this year in our trials. Versus these new Northern Glows did not. So that gives us a good indication that they're pretty winter hardy.
Northern Glow. That's the way to go. I guess that was a poet and didn't know it. No.
Yeah, you might be able to trademark that.
Oh, boy. Well, let's turn our attention to black currants. You know, on a recent show, we had a lot of people call as fans of that fruit. And maybe you could talk about the varieties that you're experimenting with.
Yeah, so we have all the black currants, the older varieties that do great. People like them, like Ben Sarek or Titania. They've been around for a long time. The Savannah Institute recently acquired breeding material from the McGinnis Nursery out on the West Coast. And they did a bunch of variety trials and things, and they're starting to sell some new varieties. Savannah Zap, Savannah Zing, Black Cone, Whistler. And you can read more about them at the Savannah Institute website, or you can go to Canopy Farm Management, which is the company that's selling that nursery stock right now. So some new varieties, they tend not to be quite so astringent as the older varieties, a little bit more palatable for fresh eating, but really as a processing fruit for smoothies or freezing or whatever, black currants are hard to beat just because they're such nutritional powerhouses.
The other variety I was thinking of was Consort. Is that?
Consort's one of the older varieties, been around. Definitely not quite as good as these newer ones. So.
Yeah, that's why I guess I was remembering it's been around a long time like I have. What are the characteristics you're looking for in a great variety?
In a grape variety?
In a great G-R-E-A-T.
Oh, grape. Yeah. Well, number one is can they survive the winters for us? That's number one. Number two is overall flavor. I think, can you eat it? And do you like to eat it? And do your neighbors and friends like to eat it? And then third would be how easy is it to grow? That's the nice thing about, currants or the honeyberries, which we can talk about too. Pretty easy to grow crops. They don't take a whole lot of maintenance or effort. Something like blueberries, right? It's pretty finicky about soil type. Pruning can sometimes be a challenge, so it doesn't work everywhere. Whereas like black currants and honeyberries are more widely adapted. So that's what we look for.
Several emails. Ryan in Washburn emailed to ask that with increasing energy demand, what types of low-maintenance edible crops are best suited for agrovoltaic systems in northern Wisconsin, systems in which agricultural production is intentionally combined with solar installations, allowing crops to grow beneath or alongside photovoltaic arrays?
Yeah. So generally, we're looking for something that relatively easy to manage. So you don't have to be in there a lot. So fruit crops can be high management. So you want a really low input type fruit crop. So that's why there's been a lot of effort with currants because they are so easy to grow. The other part is shade tolerance.
Yeah.
And so black currants actually prefer a little bit of shade. So in terms of a woody plant, that's a good option. Otherwise, there's been a lot of work on grazing with sheep as a means to grow something or agrivoltaics. There's definitely opportunities for vegetable production for sure at smaller scale. So there are ongoing projects here at the University of Wisconsin and elsewhere that are trying to find the systems that work for both the solar companies or the solar installers and also folks that are trying to farm something.
Yeah.
Definitely an opportunity there.
Olivia emailed, excuse me, she's wondering if the cultivar's genetics could hybridize with wild Native American hazelnut, and is this a concern for maintaining native plant genetics?
Yeah, this is absolutely a concern, something we think about all the time, with lots of pros and cons and cost benefits, right? So we do, if you know, folks are concerned about it, there's definitely a potential that as the pollen's going to blow around, right? And so if there are alleles or something, it might move into the wild populations. Now, whether that confers any sort of selective advantage that they would be propagated and continue to grow is an open question. So the way to mitigate that is really thinking about if you're going to grow hybrids, you know, maybe that's farther away from wild populations. We're also developing pure American hazelnut varieties for folks that are concerned about it. And that would be a good option for if you're closer to a wild population somewhere. Part of this, there's a lot of questions we don't know. Again, that whole genus, because they cross-pollinate so freely and have, you know, well before humans were here, they're really highly diverse populations already. And so it's unclear whether we can actually put something into those populations that aren't already there, right? Just yeah, because they're so wildly diverse.
Kathy and Krivitz emailed to ask if hazelnuts need spraying or control of insects and all that sort of thing.
At this point, we're sort of in the honeymoon phase, which is true for most new crops, is that there isn't a whole lot of disease or insect pressure. But as you get more and more production, potentially pests come up. The one that we worry a lot about is the nut weevil. If anyone's wild harvested American hazelnuts, in some years, like every nut has a hole in it at harvest time. That's the little weevil that was inside the nut. It's a slow building population. And so with good sanitation and making sure you harvest all the nuts every year, it's pretty manageable. So we have plantings that are 20 years old that still don't have an issue, right? If you're right next to a hazelnut wild planting or something, again, you might have more insect pressure, but so far, so good. That's one advantage of a plant that has, you know, wild genetics is they're adapted to the populations that are here, the pest populations.
Yeah.
Carol, definitely something you have to monitor, though.
Carol called to ask how she can she buy hazelnuts that are grown in Wisconsin or where, I guess.
Yeah. As far as I know, there's one company that's selling hazelnuts online. That's the American Hazelnut Company. And they sell both hazelnuts that are grown in the Midwest. They sell oil, they sell flour, and they have a new product line called Midwest Munch. It's a trail mix made with Midwest grown hazelnuts plus some other fruit crops like elderberries that are mixed in within those trail mixes. Those are proving really popular. You can buy some, you know, if you know a neighbor buying in-shell nuts, but unless you want to hand crack yourself, you know, you're usually trying to find somebody that has kernel. So
yeah, and what's the name?
We see more and more sellers as the industry grows.
Yeah, and somebody is already saying, what was the name of that place where you can buy the trail fruit?
Oh, the Midwest Munch.
Midwest Munch?
Yeah, that's from the American Hazelnut Company.
Oh, American Hazelnut Company. Okay.
Yep.
Because I knew we were going to get questions about that right away because I forgot the name of it myself, and I assume that probably listeners would too. Oh, man. Pamela in Ridgeway, what's on your mind?
Hi there. Thank you. I was under the impression that that currants in general were susceptible to, I think it was cedar apple rust or some kind of reciprocal disease with evergreens. And is that not the case with these new cultivars?
Yeah, so white pine blister rust, and there was lots of concern about, and actually quarantine's put in place in the East Coast. There isn't in place in Wisconsin. It's a disease that will move from currants, spike currants, to white pine and can cause problems. The commercial varieties that are sold are all resistant to that disease, so they don't spread it. They don't serve as an alternate host.
All right, Pamela, there you go. Thank you so much. Email from Mary. She has a few wild hazelnuts in her backyard. What can she do to make them spread? Or would it be better to plant a few cultivars near them? She's not looking for eating them, but for planting for wildlife.
Yeah, so full sun is the first thing. So hazelnuts, especially American hazelnuts, need full sun. And you can transplant them really easily. You can dig out divisions of those. The wild American hazelnuts spread with underground rhizomes. So you can just dig out chunks and replant them. That's probably the best way to do it. Otherwise, if it's just wildlife habitat, you can buy the cultivars or you can buy the American hazelnut seedlings. There are lots of sources, and those sources are usually pretty cheap, like the Wisconsin DNR, a lot of native plant nurseries. So if it's purely wildlife habitat and you don't really care about the nut production, I would definitely stick with the American hazelnut if you've got full sun.
Different fruit here. Sue in Cable emailed, she has had wonderful luck with aronia berries. Could you comment on aronia berries?
Yeah, aronia is one of those things that you don't even have to try and you get a big crop every year. Some of the commercial varieties, the two main ones, Nero and Viking, super productive, really easy to grow. But it's sort of been a problem because what do you do with all these berries? Because they don't taste very good fresh eating. In fact, most people spit them out when they try to eat them fresh. Okay. So it's definitely a processing fruit that you're making juices or fruit chews or mixing into smoothies. A nutritional dynamite for sure, which is why people really like them. But because of that really high astringency, we haven't really seen the market catch on for that. It's just not a fresh eating crop like other.
Yeah, I suppose jams or jellies you could probably make.
Jams and jellies if you had enough sugar, yep.
You need a lot of sugar, though. Let's turn our attention, because we've got a question about Kernza. So I know Kernza is another crop you're working with, Granted, emailed to ask how often does it need to be replanted? Also, is there more than one variety of Kernza? So let's just talk about Kernza in general. First, what is Kernza and go from there?
Yeah, Kernza is the trademark name for improved cultivars of intermediate wheatgrass or improved varieties, seed lines of intermediate wheatgrass. That's the base species. And it's been the dream of many for many, many years to develop a perennial grain crop, right? All of our grain crops like wheat and barley and oats, they're annual. So lots of tillage, lots of inputs. Kernza is kind of the first out of the gate as one of these perennial grain crops. There are definitely different varieties. The one that was most widely grown in our part of the world was MN Clearwater, which came out of Minnesota in a collaboration with the Land Institute. There's a fair amount of acreage of that. There are newer varieties coming along. I don't know exactly when the release date will be or availability, but the idea is each generation of new varieties has a little larger seed size. Right now, it's totally suitable as a forage crop, as a hay crop, for sure. But ideally, you know, ultimately the goal is as a grain crop and trying to get a little larger grain size, a little higher productivity each year to make it more viable that way. But it's definitely happening. You just have to be prepared for planting new varieties and like any new crop, doing your homework to know what the risks are and where things are at in the development and how best to plug in based on your risk tolerance.
Yeah, and I think I've read somewhere that it's the driftless area of our state would be, you know, kind of maybe an ideal spot for Kernza, in part because it's ability to resist erosion with the
yes,
root system.
That's exactly right. Anywhere where erosion is a concern, which is everywhere, but especially on slopes, this would be a great place for Kernza to build into grazing systems, hay systems, or there's been work into agroforestry systems to grow Kernza in between your fruit and tree crops while you're waiting for those to mature.
And I don't know if we answered, maybe you didn't, I just didn't catch it. How long does a Kernza crop last before you
have? Oh, sure. Yeah. So the yields of the grain start to decline over time. And so I've heard anywhere from 3 to 5 years is roughly the rotation length before you might switch it out. We'll see. Part of that will be driven by the pace of the breeding schedule. And as they're releasing new varieties You know, do you want to switch out your older for new varieties? But generally that 3 to 5 year range, and if your priority is grain yield, there's a lot of great research coming out every year as they try to answer and hone in on that question. So it comes, most of that's being done University of Minnesota, a lot of it out of Kansas. But in terms of most relevant to our region, it's the work being done by Minnesota.
Jason Fishbach, our guest today, the Emerging Crops Outreach Specialist, professor with UW-Madison's Division of Extension. Great to have him with us today as we talk about nut and fruit crops and the research that he and others have been doing, zeroing in on Wisconsin and the upper Midwest. Crops, berry crops, nut crops that farmers can grow, or you can grow in your own backyard, too, if you want to do it that way. Questions for him? Open lines now. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about taking a look at nut and fruit crop options for our growers here in the state, both the home gardener and the farm community as well. In the next hour, we'll be talking with the author of a new book. It's called The Continuous Vegetable Garden, Create a Perpetual Food Garden that Sows and Grows Itself. And then just looking ahead further, on Monday, our physical therapy experts are back to help you with your physical therapy questions. And then we'll talk to the coach of the UW River Falls football team. They won the national championship in Division III. And I've heard the coach talk before, and he's a good speaker, and it's going to be an interesting half-hour visiting with him. Right now, though, questions about hazelnuts or berries of a sort or another, give a call. The number, 800-642-1234. You can email to talk@WPR.org. And let's turn to Tracy in Mercer, Wisconsin. Hi, Tracy.
Hey, tell me why this is the stupidest idea in the world. So I quit thinking about it. I did my graduate work in Adams County. I'm from Adams County. Could you put those hazelnuts in rows parallel to the crops underneath the center pivot every 100 feet or so as a windbreak and a harvestable crop?
Hazelnuts.
Yes, you can, and I wish we could do that. I mean, I wish more people would do that, and that's been one of our goals. It makes total sense. So it's what we call wide alley cropping, right? It would make great for those commercial vegetable fields, for potato fields. There's going to be some weed management issues to do it, but it would make a ton of sense to put that out as a living edible windbreak that you're able to make money from rather than just taking land out of production and still be able in the alleys to grow your vegetable crop. So it's a great idea.
And Tracy, I think, was saying every 100 feet or so. Would that be about right, or would it be narrower, or what?
Yeah, so generally hazelnuts need, you know, they should be, a plant should be within 90 feet of another one to be wind pollinated. So either have to have different varieties in that row, or the rows need to be roughly 90 to 100 feet apart so that pollen can move. That's the main restriction. But if you did double rows, every 100 feet or even 200 feet, you know, that works too. So there's different ways to arrange these to make sure they get pollinated.
Any information on that on your site at all?
So a good place is our nonprofit partner, the Savannah Institute, which is really championing deployment of agroforestry systems. I'd have to look to find exact documents, but if you spend some time on their website and their guidebooks about agroforestry, I'm sure they have information about, you know, commercial vegetable alley cropping.
Yeah, and we've had folks from the Savannah Institute on the show in the past to talk about that. So a good suggestion there for sure. One of the other crops that we haven't mentioned, another interesting one in my mind, and that's the honeyberry.
Yeah. It's just, kind of similar to the table grapes, where with some recent variety releases, it really has changed the game. So the Saskatchewan folks, University of Saskatchewan, Bob Boers has been breeding honeyberries for decades. And the newer releases, Aurora is a little bit old now, but there's Boreal Beast, Boreal Beauty, and Boreal Blizzard. We're starting to see more production of that. And it's just an easier plant to grow. The berries are a little higher quality. And it's happening. We're seeing a lot of interest. Our most popular podcast and our cutting edge podcast series is about honeyberries because they're easy to grow. You're picking them in late June, early July, usually before strawberries. And by then, usually the spotted wing Drosophila is not out yet. People like the taste. The newer varieties taste better than the older ones. Pretty easy to harvest, pretty easy to grow. The big issue is the birds will clean you out, so you do have to net them. That's the main downside. But yeah, if folks are interested in a health packed, good tasting, almost like a blueberry but not a blueberry, grow the honeyberry. It's more widely adapted than blueberries would be.
Yeah, I knew about the Aurora, but I didn't. I wasn't as familiar with the Boreal Beast and that Boreal series. So that sounds like the way to go.
Yeah, and we've got new variety trials that were put in 2 years ago at West Madison, Bayfield, and Spooner. And now as those come into production, we'll be hosting field days over in the summer months so folks can come out and see the plants and taste the different varieties. I think we have 15 varieties in each of those trials, so there's a lot to choose from, and which makes it hard for growers to choose, especially commercial growers. How do you choose the right one? So hopefully that information will be useful as those plants mature.
Yeah, and when and where is that again?
So we have the trials at the Spooner Ag Research Station in Spooner, the West Madison Research Station outside Madison, and then on a private farm up in Bayfield doing this research. So the same three trials at three different locations.
Okay. And there'll be field events at any of them, or?
Yeah. So the Emerging Crops website, if you Google UW Extension Emerging Crops, you can find the mailing list link and get on the list, and then you'll get noticed when those field days are scheduled in the summer.
You also mentioned in passing podcasts, and talk more about your podcasts and what people can find if they go to those podcasts.
Yeah, I think we're up to 50-some episodes now. It's called The Cutting Edge, a podcast in search of new crops for Wisconsin. So it features early adopter growers, researchers, others that are working to develop these crops. And it's a in-depth conversation about any number of crops. I think there's probably 15 or 20 that we've covered over the years. So it's a great place to get up-to-date information and also learn more about the pros and cons and risks of all these different crops and where things are at in their development. So it's definitely worth the listen. We had a little bit of a lull putting out new episodes, but we're back on pace now. And I see one that just was released on flax, and we'll be putting one together on the Northern Glow grapes here in the next couple of weeks. It should come out. So good thing to subscribe to and stay up to date that way.
Yeah, it sure is. You've done some work on winter oilseed crops too. I don't think we've talked about that. So it's certainly worth a mention. What are these and what are they used for? I'm thinking of canola is one that comes to mind for me because I've spent a lot of time in Canada, mostly playing golf, but I've been at the University of Saskatchewan and spent some time there too, talking with folks. Yep. And canola works well there.
Yeah, so winter oilseeds, what that refers to, it's a broad range of species, but you plant it pretty late in the fall. It grows a little bit. It overwinters. Then in the spring, it grows. It's like the first thing green in the spring, and then it flowers and sets seed really early. So you're harvesting an oilseed crop in May, sometimes even earlier, depending where you are. And what that allows is think of it as a for-profit cover crop, if you will. So there's been decades of trying to convince growers to grow cover crops, and the adoption rate is still 6%. Yeah. And that's just because it's more of a cash cost than a cash crop, because you just till it in. Whereas a winter oilseed crop, you're actually harvesting an oil-rich crop in the spring, and you can relay that with soybeans or other crops. So the one that's moving the fastest is winter camelina, and it's being used as jet fuel, actually, by the aviation industry. And Cargill is involved, and we're starting to see some pretty widespread adoption. It's starting to happen in Wisconsin as well, but it's been driven by the Forever Green program at the University of Minnesota. And this is one of their main projects that's really coming to fruition now, is winter camelina. Field pennycress is another one in the pipeline. And so this is, again, from new crop development, new crop breeding, it really can change the game of agriculture, because now we have a commercial cover crop, if you will, that growers can make money. And so hopefully we'll see much more widespread adoption of cover cropping is the goal.
Yeah. And I like that forever green approach.
Right. Or sometimes we call continuous living cover. So you've got a living plant in the ground all year long.
Yeah, I love that. What do you see, just looking ahead here in our last couple of minutes, what do you see as for new fruit and nut crops, let's say the next decade? I mean, you're in about 20 years. You got at least another 10 years to go.
There you go.
What are you seeing? Or what are you hoping?
I really think we're going to see some momentum on these new crops, especially table grapes, honeyberry, hazelnuts. I think consumers are hungry for something different. They're looking to diversify their palate, and ultimately they'll decide how many acres of this is grown. I think growers are definitely looking for other options to try to make some more money on the farm. So there's just, from what I see, lots of interest. And I think we finally cracked the code on some of the crop development pieces that's unlocking this potential. But it's a new crop. All new crops come with pitfalls, and we just have to be really careful that we don't get out ahead of our skis and get too much enthusiasm, you know, without having doing it the right way, right? Slowly scaling up, making sure the markets are aligned with the production. So all the kinds of stuff that keep me awake at night to make sure we roll these out the right way.
Yeah, I was thinking about I've flashed on some of the apple varieties that quickly became very, very popular. And then so they started growing the trees in a lot of different places. But the soil conditions, I think the difference in the taste has to do sometimes with the soil conditions in which a crop is grown. And that, you know, like apples, and that changes the whole darn flavor profile. Gala would be an example probably of that.
Yeah, this is why research-based information is so important, both generating it, but then also finding the best information you can before you make big decisions about, you know, if you're putting in these new crops, really going into it eyes wide open and having done your research.
Well, if you're interested in table grapes, the Northern Glow Series sounds like the best. And again,
absolutely.
And the of the honeyberry, just to line it up, what's the honeyberry that you're looking for?
The Boreal series to go with Aurora, Boreal Beast, Boreal Beauty, and Boreal Blizzard.
And the black currants?
Black currants would be to work with Savannah Institute and Canopy on their new series from the McGinnis breeding program. So Savannah Zap, Savannah Zing, Blackcomb, Whistler. To give it a try. Plus, the older varieties of black currant all work great too. So, Titania and Benserec.
Yeah. And on that note, Jason, I want to thank you so much. Gosh, this was great. I learned a lot. I think everybody did during this hour. Appreciate it. And you'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
For sure. These are fun times. Happy to talk about it.
They sure are. Jason Fischbach is an emerging crops outreach specialist and professor within the department. Within the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Extension. And it's great to have him with us to talk about this really cool, I mean, this is his career. He's been working on this for a long, long time and certainly knows a lot and is working toward helping you and I get some great new varieties. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention to a new book. It's called The Continuous Vegetable Garden, Creating a Perpetual Food Garden that Sows and Grows Itself. What do you think of that? That next, I'm Larry Mealer.